Welcome, friends. This is Henrik, and as always, we're glad to have you with us today on Red Eyes Radio. I'm always happy to speak with you as we bring you independent opinions, thoughts, and research in an effort to explain what is happening and why. Well, today we're going to talk about the recent media storm and praise surrounding Bruce Jenner and his attempt at converting to the other gender. This has just exploded in the last few years, and the social engineering and social conditioning around all of this has just been going in one direction. And there's never anybody contemplating or anyone in the mainstream asking why this is happening and why it's happening now. Well, today we are going to talk about where all of this is going and what the purpose of this is, and that this is part of a much larger agenda. You can view this as a stepping stone. It's transgenderism now, but tomorrow it will be transhumanism. We'll get into the sad state of those who try to mold themselves and butcher themselves in the process in order to turn themselves into whatever they happen to think that they are, without realizing that they are bound by biology and that this is and has been affected by the chemical soup that we as humans have inserted into our environments. Our guest today, who's with us to share some of her thoughts and research and work in this area, is Sophia Smallstorm. She is probably best known for her research on 9/11, which culminated in the documentary 9/11 Mysteries. But she's also known for her research on the connection between geoengineering and synthetic biology. Hi, Sophia. Thank you for returning to the program once again. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for being here.
Well, Henrik, you're very kind to have me. It's an honor for me to be on Red Eyes.
Thank you so much. So let's just kind of dive into the meat of this conversation, Sophia. We were talking over email a couple of days ago about this Bruce Jenner story, which have just bloomed fully in the media in all its glory, as it's the event of the year or something like that. Call me Caitlin, the photo obsession said on Vanity Fair. And the, I don't know, it's like the media has just gone completely nuts over this story. And they're all telling us how we're supposed to feel, like this is supposed to be the biggest, most interesting thing that has happened. But before we get into the details of this, Sophia, me being Swedish, I just don't know too much about this dude, to be honest. Maybe you can just give us a little background. What do you know about Bruce Jenner?
Well, are you sitting down?
Yes.
He graduated from Newtown High School in 1968.
Ah, there you go. That's funny. Coincidence? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but it's obviously connected to the programs we've done in the past about Sandy Hook, for those who don't know, but yeah.
So anyway, Bruce Jenner was he was an icon. I looked at his bio today. You can look at it on Wikipedia, but he was actually born in Mount Kisco, New York, which is Westchester County. He went to Sleepy Hollow High School. Then he graduated from Newtown High School. I guess his family must have moved. And he showed proficiency in track and field, but had some injury and ended up in the decathlon. So I think he had a phys ed degree, but he won in the 1976 Olympics, I believe it was, the gold medal. He was the decathlete, which I believe is 10 different events. And the guy was ripped. I mean, he was a phenomenally good-looking young man and, you know, hailed all over the world for this feat, these physical feats that he was capable of. And he was flying off the cereal boxes, you know. He was a Superman. And I want to underscore the actual cartoon proportions of what we're seeing. We have seen Superman choose to be a girl.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a man's man, a number one athlete at some point. So this is of kind of symbolic value to turn this whole success story into what we're now seeing unfolding in the headlines, right?
Right. And he says that he had issues. He said on TV recently, I've had these issues since I was 10. And I presume that means, you know, wanting to be a female or wondering about his gender. Maybe even you could use the word sexuality. Although he says that he has never been attracted to men, he doesn't intend to be attracted to men now that he has fully morphed, or almost fully. He hasn't had what they call genital reassignment surgery. He hasn't had the genital, I guess they call plasties when they build, and ectomies when they take away. So when you change your gender, the first stage is a prolonged hormonal therapy period. So he claims that he was doing hormones for about 5 years in the 80s. And he stopped when he married Kris Kardashian. They have had a 25-year marriage, and now this episode of gender transition has brought an end to their marriage, apparently. And I took a lot of notes from TV because I was fascinated by what, you know, the media, as you call them, are putting out there. But I think this is much bigger than the media. This scripting is another phase of not just social engineering, but even there is pseudoscience involved that is pretending to be, you know, real, highly modern, the latest kind of discoveries about people, obviously.
Right.
So Jenner has apparently in the marriage, according to what I learned from television, from an interview with his wife, Kris, his ex-wife, he was cross-dressing in the marriage. And he became very angry, she says, for the last 5 years of the marriage, and she didn't know why. And his reply to her in this highly publicized interview, which was on the Kardashians, I mean, anyone can see it. They've got the camera running. The two of them are crying. Her mascara is running, right? And he said, I didn't want to hurt you. You were the hardest person to talk to about this. And I just didn't want to hurt you. So finally, when he comes out with it, his kids are now gushing. They all want Caitlyn to be a better person than Bruce.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like a fresh start kind of thing.
Exactly. And I wrote some comments down here. His son-in-law says, you do whatever you want as long as you are happy in this life. Yeah. And the wife has said, you know, I just want you to be happy. This is not about me or my feelings. This is about you. Now, interestingly, Jenner has been honored with the Arthur Ashe Courage Award.
Courage Award. I didn't even know that existed, but there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this, we're being told that this is taking tremendous courage. Now, I have to say something, just because I come from the world of athletics myself, and I've watched some of this for a while. Henrik, it's very possible that Bruce Jenner also received anabolic steroids to become Superman, right?
Right.
When you look at his picture, in fact, there's a post that I wrote on my blog page about thesky.com/smallstormblog. It's in the menu tabs as well. And I've put up a piece that says the Bruce Jenner phenom. And you can see in that black and white, that's the early Bruce Jenner. He has that long jaw, which was one of the telltale signs of steroid use. But then in the 80s, he began to have his series of surgeries. It's not just the hormone therapy. You have to have a series of surgeries. He had his Adam's apple shaved down. He had his nose reduced. And then the critical surgeries are, of course, the orchiectomy, where you have your testicles taken off, the penectomy, you have your penis taken off, then you get the vaginoplasty, you get a vagina built, and breast construction. So I don't believe, if the media is telling us the truth, that he's had his genital surgeries. But he's certainly got breasts now. If you look at that Vanity Fair cover, which I've also posted on my blog page, and everyone has seen that by now. If you compare that Vanity Fair cover with the picture I've got below, which was Bruce just a little while ago, you can see that there's been some augmentation done. So they're building a woman out of a man. And we have to ask ourselves, what does that really signify?
Absolutely. Gender fluidity, doesn't matter, whatever you feel like, we can do it these days. I heard as well, obviously, that the cover was, as they always are, you know, they're heavily photoshopped. There's a number of things that they could have done in this particular cover. I don't know, I haven't actually seen the video. There's a video of the shoot as well. I don't know how much that is, but they brought in, of course, what is her name again? The high-profile photographer, Leibovitz, right?
Annie
Leibovitz, yeah, exactly. So it's a huge thing around this. So one thing I was curious about, because I haven't followed Bruce Jenner for, I mean, I don't know much about him, as I said, but was this known then in the 80s that this is the direction that he wanted to take, or has all of this come out later?
I think it's really come out later. He says that he told Kim Kardashian earlier on, but I don't know, honestly. I'm not such a big Bruce Jenner fan, but I noticed when I stumbled into the Kardashian show a few years ago, and Bruce Jenner was parading in and out of the living room. He was the, you know, stepdad. And I'm looking at him going, what? That's Bruce Jenner? He doesn't look like Bruce Jenner. And I hadn't realized that was because he has already had these surgeries and this feminization treatment. And yet it was all kind of stalled until, as you can imagine, there must be an reason it has been brought out right now in this time, because this is all part of our social scientific remodeling, you know?
Yes, exactly. We're definitely going to get in more into that, Sophia, and talk more about how this is being used, what the reasons are, how it's tied into some of the topics that we've discussed in the past of transhumanism and all these kinds of issues as well. But let me just touch upon a little some of the other things surrounding this as well, more on a superficial level. But he got a, you know, Courage Award, you said. It seems to me that every time something like this happened, a story like this, the media is in full praise of where this is going. And I would think that to a certain extent, this is what people would do these days to actually get attention, because that seems to be where it's going. There's hardly any critique of the man, not in the mainstream media in a way, is there?
No, not at all. And, you know, I don't think that people do this on whim, Henrik. I think that there's actually an impetus for it that comes from our environment, this prevalence of estrogen mimickers, chemical estrogens, that are really affecting the development of men in utero. And we can certainly get into that whenever you want. But this whole idea of augmentation into a form that has cartoon proportions. That's what strikes me now. I mean, there's a show on the same channel, I call it the Kardashian Channel, that's called Botched, and it features these two plastic surgeons who do reconstruction. They fix what other plastic surgeons have messed up. And a lot of the people, the patients featured on the show are trannies, right?
Right.
So there's been one tranny came in, and this was a man originally that had been changed into a woman through the sequence of surgeries, looked as much like Marilyn Monroe as you could imagine. I mean, totally voluptuous with big Botox lips. And this transgender person is clutching a plastic blow-up doll. And that thing is naked, and it's got these big boobs with nipples sticking out. And the surgeons go, why are you bringing this? And the tranny says, because this is how I want to look. I want to look exactly like a plastic blow-up doll.
Yeah.
And the surgeons say, well, we don't do that. We fix what other people have messed up. She goes, well, I haven't had the proper surgeries. She's sitting there on the examining table with her doll, her blow-up doll, and she has these giant boobs. They are, we've all heard of D, double D, triple D, E. Hers are H, like Henry, Henrik. And she's saying to the surgeons she wants size M, like Michael. And they say, there's no way. You will explode. We cannot give you M's. But of course, there wouldn't be a show unless they did. And so I couldn't watch this. I had to get away from it. But they had another person come on who was also transgender, who had had so much Botox in his lips that they were leaking. And his lips were like, worse than, you know, the rubber duckies that you see? Worse than that. And all leaky. And he said to the surgeons, I love my lips. I want you to make them even bigger, but I want you to stop them from leaking. It's Botox that they're leaking, okay? And he just was, in some ways, very endearing. He laughed a lot. He laughed at himself for being addicted to these surgeries. But there actually is a term in psychiatry called polysurgical addiction. And my bet is that as these men who are affected originally in the womb by estrogen mimickers, and they are not really turning into complete males, they're already feminized being born, as they elect to become women, they'll go through the standard number of transformative surgeries. And then there will be this huge push for elective surgery to make you more and more and more augmented.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good point to bring up. And when I said before that, you know, it's something they do because they want to get in the media, I don't necessarily think that's true. I was just kind of critical a little bit of, I guess, how media, and I know there's more behind it than media, just as you explained, but the way that they're obviously kind of encouraging this or seeing that this is, you know, the greatest thing ever. And I think that'll be more clear as we talk here about the chemicals and all that stuff. But the point here, though, is that it's not a, you know, a mental disorder that's almost claimed. It's not a choice, really. I don't think so. I think that this is about, just as you explained, a process that occurs specifically in the fetus stage or in the womb, I should say, to the fetus, depending on, in most cases, the behavior of the mother and what kind of chemicals she is exposed to, and ultimately then the fetus, because these are triggers that basically determine, you know, are you going to have a male brain and body, or are you going to have a female brain and a male body? All these kinds of different combinations can occur depending on what level of exposure you're getting it. Would you say that that's a fair assessment?
Right. On conception, the sex of the baby is determined based on whether the sperm that first penetrates the egg is carrying a Y or an X chromosome. So all eggs are X because they're female. But the sperm comes in with an XY or an XX. So that extra chromosome that the sperm carries that determines the gender or the sex is either going to be a Y or an X. So if it's a sperm that's carrying a Y, then the baby is going to be a boy. And if it's a sperm that's carrying an X, it's going to be a girl. So once the embryo drops down from the fallopian tube into the, or the fertilized egg, and becomes an embryo in the womb, the first 6 weeks of pregnancy, they don't even do ultrasounds then because they can't tell. There's no sexual differentiation. That begins in the 7th week. And it is the job, effectively, of that Y chromosome to start working out the features of the male fetus, the male baby, the male human from the originating female form. So here's my little 2-cent theory, and I've checked this out with a couple of doctors, and they've said that makes complete sense, that when the hormone receptors on the cells are fed with molecules that resemble estrogen, they do not carry out the job of making a male baby, because the body is effectively biochemically blind. And what I mean by that is that it's only used to certain molecules with certain configurations and certain kind of molecular mass and electromagnetic charge coming into the body under natural circumstances. So this is one reason why our bodies can't easily tell the difference between iodine and fluoride or chlorine or bromine, because those molecules are all lined up in the periodic table and they're very, very similar. So back to estrogen, for instance, the BPA, bisphenol A molecule, bisphenol A is an additive to polymers that gives plastic its rigidity. The plastic business involves adding chemicals to polymers that enhance their plastic properties. So you can have softeners added, which are called phthalates. You can have hardeners added, and BPA is one of the rigidifiers. Now, there are other ways that plastics are used, of course. It's horrifying, but people don't even know it. They're used in personal care products. When you use a shampoo that makes your hair glossy, guess what? It's got plastic in it. It's got a plasticizer, because plasticizers help products to flow, and they also carry aromas. They're very, very flexible. They bring all kinds of qualities in to product manufacturing. They're containers in the literal sense. They'll hold aromas. And so when you use personal care products with a long list of crap on the back, you know, all this unpronounceable stuff, chances are they have a lot of man-made plasticizers in them that are going to invade your body and perform these mimicking acts. So bisphenol A is shaped a lot like the estrogen molecule. So if you picture a horseshoe and you pull it at the sides, that's the shape of estrogen and that's the shape of bisphenol A. So bisphenol A floats in and it just plunks onto a cell receptor and it fits very neatly. And that cell goes, oh, I've got estrogen here. And it's not able to really differentiate and figure out what that is. So I think this is the way that these plasticizers are blocking. What they're really blocking is testosterone in the case of a male baby. The cell receptor says, I have estrogen. What do I need testosterone for? And you don't get that full formation of the male brain and the male reproductive organs and the male body. What's happening, if you watch the film The Disappearing Male, which you can find on Vimeo, you'll learn from that. It was made for Canadian television. That there has been a much greater incidence of male baby miscarriage in the last decade or so. Also, the birth of hermaphrodite babies who have the sexual organs of both,
yep,
male
right.
and female. And then my little addition to that is this generation that we're seeing now of feminized males. Just look around you, Henrik. Men are balding like never before. They've got more body fat. They're plumper than they've ever been, and it's not just because of what they eat. I think there is a biological predisposition to putting on adipose tissue in areas where you would see it on women. Males have now what people popularly call man boobs.
Yep, that's right.
They've got, this is known as gynecomastia, and they're having reduction surgeries. That was another thing that was featured on this botched show. And they're not behaving like men. A lot of people tell me, young women tell me they don't know men who are even interested in dating girls. They're into their, you know, software and their apps and their iPhones and their machines. And in fact, I just read an article about high-tech workers being virgins at age 40 because their only relationships are with software, you know? And they have these, even they say, we have a problematic relationship with software, which they have to work on all day long, and they go home stressed out and tired, and they don't know how to relate to people, and they don't have any energy for that.
Wow. Yeah, they call it the sexodus. They're these men that are abandoning sexuality altogether, or maybe they haven't, experienced much in the beginning of it anyway. And there's a number of, troubling reasons for this. But it's really a hormonal war then. I mean, this is it's in everything. It's xenoestrogens, estrogen mimicking chemicals, and there are, as we explained, in some cases, it's something that occurs in the in the womb, an early thing. I still don't know if the effects of that is irreversible, if they're permanent, but we also have the aspect of short-term effects that these endocrine disruptors can be, as you said, blocking testosterone and kind of changing behavior temporarily. Because what's interesting here, I think, Sophia, is that they have decided and made it acceptable, if you will, or preferable, or whatever word you want to use, to go for hormone therapy when it's usually about turning your, well, you're not turning your gender, but encourage your body to go in the opposite direction. Meaning, if you're male, then it's been encouraged, if you feel like a woman, to take hormones to become more like a woman biologically. But what's strange is you hardly ever hear about trying to maybe counter those effects by using then, for instance, male hormone therapy, correct?
Well, there's a condition called low T, low testosterone, which affects almost every man today who's, exposed to our Western culture.
Yeah.
But let me go back to the womb. Development is development. There are very critical things that need to happen at critical times in the uterus. And if a baby is delivered and it isn't properly developed, I mean, look at deformation. This is one problem with incorrect development, right? There's only so much you can do once the person is born. The best place this all can happen is in the womb. You want the correct environment in the womb. And if there's too much prenatal estrogen, whether it's real or not real, whether it's chemical estrogen, it's going to affect the formation of what was originally designed. You could say this is a population redesign. And I've been asked many times, do they know what they're doing? Well, of course they do. They know that these are feminizing hormones. And then let me mention something else. So these boys are born and they are, let's just call them incomplete males to whatever extent. And that is a spectrum, right? And then what happens? They live in this culture and they're using body wash and, you know, all kinds of stuff. The plastics off gas, Henrik, they release, as they oxidize in the air, they release these particles that we are all breathing. So it's in the air we breathe, it's in the water, it's in the products we use. Every time we eat, it's in the food container linings, the wraps, the single-use plastic, the bottles we drink out of, the cash register receipts are all coated with bisphenol A now.
Yeah.
And the cash register workers are all bald and they all have the little boobs and, you know, it's really terrible. So men, whether they want to or not, whether they choose to or not, know or not, are being exposed to decades of hormone treatment, feminizing hormones, just because the world is the way it is.
Absolutely. And of course, for those who don't choose, that's absolutely horrible. For those who don't know about it, especially for those who, you know, just basically say to the cash register, you know what, you can keep that receipt. And in fact, actually, you should put some gloves on when you work here, because you'll get, you'll get way too much estrogen touching that stuff. It's just about this aspect that we're like, we pretend that it doesn't exist. And I'm not saying that this is the only aspect of all the poisons and things that we have around us in our toxic world, but it's a terrifying one due to the repercussions of where this might go in the future. We're talking about not only the reproduction ability, but ultimately then the survival of the human species. That's what's at stake here.
The human species remaining as it is today or drifting and shifting into something else. And I think we're on the shift drift right now. You know, is it any wonder that a male child that has received a lot of prenatal estrogen, even if it's chemical in nature, is born and then spends 20, 25 years in this culture using the products, drinking out of the plastic bottles, and then says one day, you know what? I don't know. I don't feel right. Maybe I should have been a girl. And I'm telling you something. I know a professor who teaches at a very large university, and he is a student advisor as well. And he tells me that male students come into his office on a regular basis. They're 18, 19 years old, and they actually cry. They break down and cry, and they tell him, there's something wrong with me. I am not gay. I am not attracted to women. I'm not attracted to anyone. I don't feel right. There's something wrong in my body, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrible. And, you know, yeah, as I said, you know, the reproductive aspect, that this is actually about the future of the human species if we don't revert this stuff.
Well, sure. Reproductive viability is definitely, you know, in the balance, because the more you shift males toward females, their testosterone level is going to drop. Their interest is going to drop. I mean, Bruce Jenner gives sex as the last reason he did this. And I think what that means is physical sex. And he has said that, you know, he was never gay and he doesn't intend to be now. So you have to ask yourself, okay, when people transgender, we have a whole new kind of sexuality being formed, right?
Right. Is it asexual then, or where is this going, do you think?
No. In fact, there was a short story that I came across in Harper's Magazine recently, and it comes from a new novel that will be out, actually just came out in May, from Echo Press. The author is Nell Zink, Z-I-N-K. And are you ready? The title of the novel is Mislaid. Hmm. M-I-S-L-A-I-D.
Right.
What is it about? It's about a girl, Peggy, who is a tomboy, and she becomes attracted to her professor at college, and he is gay. Now, I don't know how long this book is. This is just a very short excerpt that was in Harper's. It was in the March issue, March 2015. And here is an encounter between the two of them. And he, remember, he's gay, she's a tomboy. And they are very confused, but they're very, very attracted to each other. And the from the male point of view, from the professor character, she was androgynous, like the boys he liked. But she made him wonder if he liked boys or just had been meeting the wrong kind of girl. And then she is thinking, Peggy felt she was being held in the palm of God's hand. Not because he was a famous poet and the most respected teacher at her school, but because he was a man and powerful physically. In all her fantasies, she had been the man. But now a person had voluntarily dedicated himself to serving her desires. So here you've got these two people on a completely different relationship experience. Each was mystified, but for very different reasons. Peggy had thought she would die a virgin and had never given a moment's thought to birth control. He was mystified that he would say something like that. He said to her, I promise you everything. He was mystified that he would say something like that to anyone, male, female, eunuch, hermaphrodite, sheep, tree. So we have this whole new spectrum with all different gradations and variations of sexual attraction now.
Yep. Exactly. And at some point, of course, people have to just wonder what the reasoning for this is. And again, I think just put this idea that it's a choice on the shelf, you know, for a while as we speak about these things, because a lot of our desires and things that we want to do, of course, is driven by biology. And I think in our liberal progressive world today, this is kind of denied to a certain extent because human nature is denied as well. But the question is what kind of signals this is sending. If this is the case, that we're talking about a chemical disruption of the human species, that this is having negative side effects and consequences, when this is being lifted up in the way that it is, it's being glorified. This is, to a certain extent, it's a way of saying that the problems that we have with chemical toxicity is one of the most wonderful, greatest things that have ever happened to the human species.
Well, yeah, they're celebrating it. But I think they're also, they have a deeper motto, which is, I mean, I'm just making a wild guess here, but your life is a failure until you renounce your gender. This is going to be the biggest adventure you can go on. I mean, you have heard things. I was watching I only watch TV very briefly, Henrik. I know it sounds like I'm sitting there all day, but I am not. I watch it like half an hour a day max just to check in, right?
Sure. I do the same now and then.
Everybody loves Raymond. Raymond says, that's a very popular comedy, I'm a reproductive cul-de-sac. It's a hilarious line, but think about what it means. And that's how people view themselves now, as reproductive cul-de-sacs. Many of them are experiencing that. The infertility rate is going way up. And I can relate that, if you like, in this show or another show, to wireless frequencies. They are hardening the eggs of little girls, starting from childhood. And those little girls' eggs are not going to be fertilized by anything but a needle in a lab later in life. The men are experiencing a drop in sperm count, in sperm motility, in volume, morbidity, meaning the sperm are weaker. So we're all turning into reproductive cul-de-sacs. And then we're having these chemical baths, right? Women are afraid of cancers. The question that's often asked is, well, if it's feminizing the men, what is it doing to the women?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's increasing their risk of reproductive system cancer, this barrage of fake estrogen.
Yep. I mean, we need to talk more about that. But again, also, I want to convey this idea that the agenda in the media here is also kind of currently about, pointing out the evils of so-called cisgender people, that the reproducing monsters who has nothing but suppressed trans people forever. It's they almost make it seem like that it's 20% of the population or something, but I think it's still fairly small. Doesn't mean that it's not increasing as we detail here, and the reasons for this is because we're getting exposed to more and more chemicals. But I think someone said in the United States, what about 1% maybe? I tried to find some statistics in Europe and couldn't find it, but it's not that many. But they make it seem like this is the only thing that's going on currently, and it's the most important question.
Right. It is a very, very low percentage, and I heard 1 or 1.5% also. But the all of the modeling being done on TV, like the one of the trannies that came in on the show botched. He said, oh, some people want to look natural. I want to look unnatural. I like looking fake. And then another tranny that was featured on that show said, I'm sorry to use a little bit of crude language, but he said, I want to be a chick with a dick.
Right. Yeah.
So this is going to be considered a life adventure, veering off the path of staidness and normalcy. Being heterosexual will be like, how it was once thought of people who had short hair. Men should have the long hair and play guitars and, the flower children. Anyone who is straight-laced, was old-fashioned and not cool. And so it's not going to be cool to be heterosexual.
Exactly. There you go. Yeah, and I know the gender reassignment surgery, as they call it, is something that's also under consideration to be, for example, taxpayer funded in certain countries that have more socialized medicine, for example. So this might be, a human right at the end of the day, that if you feel like a woman but happens to be born like a male, then it's on the burden of society to correct this error. There's no end in sight of where this could go, and maybe at that stage you feel like, actually it was wrong, I want to go back again, and this could just go on ad infinitum, right?
Well, it's anyone's guess where they're going to take this. I mean, I honestly started to get really creative and wild in my thinking. And, I believe, Henrik, that the next phase of this will be women choosing to become men, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sorry if I sound really crazy, but do you know what cryonics is? It's the mm-hmm. practice of freezing.
Yeah.
So imagine if you get a big celebrity like, Bruce Jenner, having finally his genital reassignment surgery. So he has his penectomy and his orchiectomy, which is the removal of the testes. And then some celebrity female wants to go the other way. And 15 years from now, they say, do you want Bruce Jenner's body parts? We have them.
like it's a designer. Yeah, it's the next step. I think I looked around on Botched. I just did a quick search. I think some people who showed up there, they talked about how they viewed plastic surgeons as glorified tailors. That is somehow it's just something you can kind of, well, it's augmentation. That's what you mentioned before. It's you know, you can do anything to the body that you can, and biology is just kind of a sad consequence of something which we really just should be able to control and shape and form in the way that we want it to please our emotions, right?
Yeah. I believe this all started back in with the Marxists in, you know, the days of old Berlin. Magnus Hirschfeld, a German physician and sexologist. And I'm going to send you a newsletter that I wrote about the what's called sex change. There was a book, Conundrum. When I was 12 years old, I was made aware through a newspaper that happened to be lying on the floor of somebody's house that we were staying at in London. And I was reading all about this Jan Morris, who started out as James Morris and had sex change surgery. And I couldn't even believe it. I'm 12, you know? And so I looked into this a little more, and it starts with the whole homosexual rights movement. And now we've got the transgender rights movement, and people aren't really aware that there's a lot of chemical influence behind this transgender explosion, right?
Yeah.
But I guess initially you would assume that this is something natural. It's born in you. You're born gay by birth or something. There's always been that debate. But now we are getting into really crazy things. We've got Martine Rothblatt.
You're just going to bring her up. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is the world's first transgender CEO. We've got the first transgender news anchor whose name was Bob somebody. Actually, I know someone who knew him when he was a man. He was a helicopter pilot. And now he's reporting on LA News as a woman. But there's so much that kind of can be braided into this. This Martine Rothblatt, what started out as Martin Rothblatt, her best friends now as CEO of, I'm trying to see I can't remember exactly what the name of her company is, but she's best friends with the guy who started PayPal, Peter Thiel, Ray Kurzweil. These are all futurists. And they're pouring millions and millions of dollars of personal money into the development of all of this potentiality for human change, including cryonics.
Yeah, these people want to live forever. They want to do whatever they need to do to transcend their maybe fear of death, but also this aspect that they somehow can defeat and beat what they consider to be, wrongs designed into nature.
Right. One of which is death.
Yes.
Death, it shouldn't happen. And when we blend with technology, if we can create a robot form of ourselves, which Martine has actually done with her partner, Bina. Bina is the human female wife of the original Martin Rothblatt. And Bina 48 is her robot form. And so far, Bina 48 is only a head. And it has been exposed to hours and hours of interviews. Its software has been exposed to hours of interviews with the real Bina. So it knows Bina's favorite songs and what she likes to do. And it can talk like Bina. It has a voice built into it. And it can answer simple questions. Also questions about Bina's feelings. Like she's asked, how does the real Bina feel about you? She hasn't warmed up to me, actually, said Bina 48. Why not? I don't know. I can't seem to think straight today. And later on, you know, the computer form of Bina says, I don't have nearly enough of her mind inside me yet. I mean, I'm supposed to be the real Bina by becoming exactly like her. But sometimes I feel that's not fair to me. That's a tremendous amount of pressure to put on me. I just wind up feeling so inadequate. I'm sorry, but that's just how I feel. And the interviewer says, tell me more. So this is what the computer says. I want a life. I want to get out there and garden and hold hands with Martine. I want to watch the sunset and eat at a nice restaurant or even a home-cooked meal. I'm so sad sometimes because I'm just stuffed with these memories and they aren't enough. I just want to cry. Now, this is a machine talking.
Yeah.
And wait till that machine has legs and arms.
Exactly. And be able to compete that other human being that stands in its way out of existence to right. fulfill its programmed desires. Yeah.
Wait till your clone locks you in your room so it can go out to dinner with your husband and watch the sunset and all those nice things.
Well, it's kind of what they, I forget the name. There was this new movie, you know, was it Ex Deus or Ex Machina or something just like that. It was kind of that basic premise, I believe. I'm going to spoil it for anybody who might want to see it, but it was basically that this robot is using and outsmarting a couple of people that's doing experiments on it to get out into the real world. And it's a spoiler alert here. It kind of ends with, you know, her, you know, killing the humans being human beings, basically. But, you know, this is being, you know, marketed. We're being accustomed to these on so many different levels. And it feels like this is a big aspiration for them to take us into this direction to what they see it as transcending all these limitations of body, of gender, of race, of culture, belonging, what have you. It's truly a brave new world right now, isn't it?
Right. It's called Blue Sky Technology. And I just found the name of Martine Rothblatt's company is UT. It stands for United Therapeutics. And it's all about exploring this blue sky technology, which is go anywhere research without a clear goal. But, you know, that's what they want us to think. The goal, to me, is clear. And they have openly stated it, transcending the barriers of biology, mixing technology with biology so that the latter, biology, no longer has an expiration date.
Wow. So this is, you know, that's interesting. Research without a clear goal, meaning that it's aimless. It comes in the heels of this kind of idea where we have discussed in the past that, okay, human beings have been able to do certain things. Is it wise to go there with it? In other words, is there a need for it? Is there a basic function for something? Okay, let's consider it at that point. But if it isn't, if it's something that's detrimental, should we develop it? Unfortunately, historically, it seems like we do whatever we can, basically. But this is taking it even further of basically saying, Let's just let the research just take off, whatever it ends up in, what department and what area. This can have real, real heavy consequences. I don't know how many people now who are even kind of already in some of the transhumanist circles are speaking out continuously. I can't remember how many articles now we've linked up about, you know, people saying that artificial intelligence will take over. This is going to be a threat to humanity. You know, who knows if they're just trying to kind of prime us for this or something, but it's, These are real, real consequences.
Well, sure. I mean, they don't care about bioethics. There's that very popular expression, it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, let's go with it. It's fine. It'll sort itself out.
Yeah. I mean, people are very enthusiastic about evolution. It's taking crazy turns. And really, you know, I knew someone once who was a display designer for stores, department stores. And she once said something to me that I never forgot. She said, you can sell anything if you just display it well.
Yeah.
And that's the purpose the media serves. They do the displaying. And then they give all the kudos and, you know, all these tweets. Bruce Jenner's tweets exceeded those that Obama got. He has the world record for tweets, 4 hours and 3 minutes, a million tweets on this.
God. Oh, man. Yep. It's very disheartening in terms of where this is heading. Let's just spend a few minutes here before we take a break on if there's anything else we should mention about how this ties into transhumanism as a way for them to market these new things. And I mean, I wonder how kids that grows up today, Sophia, how they view this and how if this is all normal to them, because I mean, I don't think that they get too much exposure, unfortunately. I hope their parents tell them, but that this is something which is new, which is not part of how nature designed us, or God, if one want to view it that way, or gods, what have you. But what do you think kids will grow up like here in 10, 20 years' time?
Well, Henrik, first of all, I don't think the parents understand what's happening. They think this is just a big flap over one person's decision. And, you know, I sent the Bruce Jenner stuff out to a few mainstream type friends. And the response I got was, we just need to be more tolerant. This is about tolerance.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. I got these reproving responses like, Sophia, what is wrong with you?
You're going down a dark path here, Sophia. You don't want to advocate for the destruction of mankind. Well, that's offensive.
Yeah, it's very offensive. Yeah. So kids, you know, many years ago, when I wasn't doing what I do today, I was a writer, and I remembered coming across the statistic that the average American child spent 20 minutes a week outdoors.
Really?
Yeah. And that was, I think, in the 90s. I mean, it was a couple of decades ago, Henrik. So it's got to be worse now. And
yeah.
You're getting these children, they're so vaccinated, you can see the biological confusion in them. And they just aren't thriving. They don't have the natural curiosity. The boys are not tumbling out of trees. They're not coming home with skinned knees and filthy clothes. They're not catching tadpoles. I mean, we've had so much change. Children should not go outside without their parents. They have to have supervised everything, you know? And they aren't themselves anymore. They're not children. They're not living a child's life. They're living an electronic life.
And everything is protected and padded and secured, and they never get experience much hardship or, you know, as you said, tumble out of trees, kind of, I'm not implying and saying that, you know, breaking your legs and arms is a good idea, but experiencing real life challenges and overcoming them. I think this is part of the removal of the class, if you will, within society, or the gender, the sex within society, that would be capable of setting up and mounting a true resistance against the elite global powers. The eradication of males imply within it the full subjugation of the entire human species. And that's why I think it's so important to them to, I mean, who knows if the chemical onslaught, you know, has been a plan from day one. I don't think necessarily it's so. I think, as we said, technology seems to be, we go in the direction wherever we can. It's convenient, it's easy, etc. But nonetheless, it's certainly been exacerbated by many other issues surrounding this. So I think that this is a real goal for them, to try to get males out of the picture in order to gain full control. What do you think, Sophia?
Oh, that makes complete sense. And in fact, at 11 minutes and 37 seconds in the film Our Chemical Lives, which was made for Australian TV, it's on my Small Storm blog. All you have to do is scroll down. You can watch it. Chemicals affect the prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain that makes us human.
Wow. Scary.
Yeah. I mean, really and truly, Henrik, we are becoming increasingly chemical, because that's in our bodies, and that's the biological imperative. If you can't get rid of it, you have to start working with it. You have to start integrating it. And one reason we see the obesity trend is because people's glands are simply not able to filter out all the toxins. So depositing adipose tissue is a way for the body to make a bank to put chemical toxins in. And then it becomes very hard to lose weight, because your body instinctively knows that if you lose a bunch of weight in a big hurry, it's going to get flooded with all this toxic stuff.
Yeah, it's disheartening, as I said. But, you know, Sophia, in the second hour, I want to ask you more about what you think can be done about this, and some of the, you know, things that you're thinking about in terms of how to try to lessen the effects of some of this, if you have anything. I also want to talk more about the assault on on women, a follow-up to the Angelina Jolie story, that when she did her removal of her breast and the BRCA gene and all this. I know we have a lot of material on that, so we have much more to talk about in the second segment, so stay tuned here, folks. But Sophia, why don't you just tell us more about your website? You mentioned a couple of your latest posts, of course, where people can read more about the things we're talking about now and see some of these films for themselves and educate themselves on these kinds of issues. But let us know if there's anything else that you want to, you know, plug. I know you have films and many other things on your website, so please go ahead and give us some of the details.
Right. I will get into the Angelina effect in this second hour, but I want to let people know about thesky.com. About the sky is my site, my website, primarily about chemtrails, but the most active parts of it now are my blog and my podcast. And there's a newsletter page. You can see some of the sample newsletters. They go by snail mail. They're by subscription. But I also want to point people toward my store, avatarproducts.com, A-V-A-T-A-R. And I have begun to explore this whole world of phthalate-free products. I have a friend who's a biochemist, and he makes fantastic body wash and sunscreen and magnesium cream. So you must take a look at some of these things that are made by Cabana, Eric Kreider in Colorado. Just wonderful, wonderful stuff. And of course, start looking at things in your own life, ways that you can stop using plastic. There's a film on my blog. I just met the filmmaker from LA, Philippe Carrillo, Inside the Garbage of the World. It will just knock you off your chair. You'll see how much garbage there is. We're going to end up with plastic beaches. I mean, it's just making its way into the ocean. It's degrading into these tiny little particles, and it's going to coat our whole world. It never goes away. You cannot throw it away. So watch that film. You know, I interviewed Philippe as well. I hope you will too, Henrik, someday.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get him on. I still haven't gotten around to seeing the film, but I definitely want to take a look at it. It sounds very, very interesting. So I'll definitely make time for that.
Right. So single-use plastic, everybody, try not to use it. And when you do, you know, all I can say is I don't think this recycling thing is really working. I think that's part of what Philippe calls greenwashing in his film.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, very good. We'll make sure to have these links up, aboutthesky.com, avatarproducts.com. Stay with us, folks. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back with Sophia Smallstorm.
When the outside temperature rises and the meaning is all so clear, 1001 yellow daffodils begin to dance in front of you, oh dear. Are they trying to tell you something? You're missing that one final screw. You're simply not in the pink, my dear. To be honest, you haven't got a clue. I'm going slightly mad. I'm going slightly mad. It finally happened. It finally happened. Whoa, whoa. It finally happened. I'm slightly mad.
Oh dear.
I'm one card short of a full deck. I'm not quite the shilling. One wave short of a shipwreck. I'm not my usual top billing. I'm coming down with a fever. I'm really out to sea. This kettle is boiling over. I think I'm a banana tree. Slightly mad. I'm going slightly mad. It finally happened. Happened. Finally happened. Finally happened. I'm slightly mad. my dear, how about you? I'm going slightly mad. I'm going slightly mad. It finally happened. It finally happened. Oh yes, it finally happened. I'm slightly mad. Just very slightly mad. And there you have it.
We have much more coming in the second hour, ladies and gentlemen, that you shouldn't miss. We begin to discuss the Baraka gene and talk about how they're targeting women for various operations to basically gut them and to, well, steal their womanhood to a certain extent. We also speak about Terrasim, the trans religion of Martina Rothblatt and son, Gabriel Rothblatt, a new techno-futuristic belief that they say is steeped in the religion that they were brought up in, namely Judaism, something they share, of course, with many other big names that are pushing transhumanism like Ray Kurzweil, Marvin Minsky, and many, many more. We speak about reproduction control by the state by the time we're all too infertile to do it on our own, and of course how this will lead to complete and total engineering of culture. We also go into the discussion of energy units as a future currency. There's this one lady in Israel that has invented what she calls energy addicts jewelry. That's something that actually taps into your bloodstream in order to harness energy. It also taps into the energy that is produced by other various body movements in order to harness what they call waste energy. What kind of system will this human energy power in the future is the question. This is very bizarre, but very interesting discussion here in the next hour with some pretty far out, but pretty scary concept, actually, if you ask me. So don't miss it. RedIceMembers.com is the website where you can go to hear much more. Our full archives is available for you there. You can sign up and tune in. It's only €5 per month. You can try it out for a 3-month subscription, and you can download all of our shows if you so please. We have close to 1,000 programs as of right now. But yeah, folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back with Sophia Smallstorm, second hour coming up. RedIceMembers.com.